You're listening to Be There, Do That, the podcast featuring everyday stories about food, race, and social impact in Africa.
Like you, I'm tired. I'm tired and out of patience waiting for this COVID-19 drama to die down. And yet here on the continent, we're told, most countries haven't even yet seen the peak rise in cases. I don't know. I'm tired. I need coffee to make the most basic decisions on a daily basis. Yeah, usually only one. Continental coffee. East African coffee. Ugh. Kenyan coffee, to be precise. Yes, I'm black and that's my fault. I got it from my mama. Yeah, yeah, yeah. My name is Africa. I am the future. There's nowhere better. And I've been drinking coffee for a long time. For me, it kind of went like this. No coffee until I was at university, then Musa cups of coffee daily, drip coffee, two sugars, Cremora, and I was happy. Until once upon a time, while traveling in Italy, I was offered an espresso. Neat, with a lemon twist after dinner. And from then on, it's been no turning back to the present moment. I can only drink espresso, two shots, half a spoon of sugar, steamed goat milk on the side. And beans? I don't know. Most times, I don't care where they come from. I just want to see black gold in my cup with a head of foam that I've come to know is called crema. And if there's a bit of oily residue on the top, I feel like I've tasted heaven. Okay, two cups.
Oh my goodness, no. Because in fact, if you get that very dark coffee bean and then you can, and then it's oily, that's bad.
Yeah, that's how it began. And you know, you never think you need to be schooled until the teachers show up.
That's really bad. Because once the coffee oils, you can see them on the bean, that's already a bad sign. Because that oiliness makes the coffee bitter. So a good roaster should know how to roast it dark, but without the oils coming out of the bean. Once mm-hmm. the oils come out of the bean, then that's a first sign that that coffee will be bitter.
Okay. That was Esther Otieno, owner of Kenya's premier barista training academy, Barista Pro. Not only does she know a thing or two, three, four, five about roasting, tasting, brewing coffee, she's at the top of the craft of training and sourcing Kenya's top baristas. I hope you're listening to this after you've had your first cuppa, at least, because let me tell you, this was an education for me unlike any other. And it's only coffee, a beverage, right? Now, of course, I couldn't visit her up there right now, so...
Number one, if the coffee is too darkly roasted, you will not see that white center cut.
The center what? Okay, let's take a few steps back. Coffee. It's a bean.
Yeah, when it's very darkly roasted. That's white center cut is chaff. It's chaff. It's like a silver skin that is usually on the green bean. Mm-hmm. So when you roast it, it peels off. It peels off when you roast it.
Okay.
It's like ground nuts. You see, it's like ground nuts. When you roast it, that outer skin comes out very easily. So for the coffee, when you roast the coffee too dark, you will not have that white center cut. It will, you know, all of it will be gone. That's number one.
Aha. Uh-huh. So the bean has a center and roasting is at the center of good coffee. So how do we get from the bean to the cup? I figure maybe I should make another cup of crap coffee, put my head down, and do a bit of research before getting back to talking about this center cut, what it is, and where it fits in with my dark roasted and oily coffee.
So it starts from the green coffee beans that you bought, because there are classifications of coffee beans. So the best of the best is called specialty coffee. It's called 80% and above, because the professional cuppers or the professional coffee tasters, they usually have a score sheet. When they are testing the coffee, they give it scores. So any coffee that scores 80 and above, that's specialty. Yeah, so specialty coffee, using just a simple language, it means like excellent cup of coffee.
First homework Esther gave me, a bit of digging. How to find proper green beans. And not the kind meant for a salad or a brady. Come on, stay with me, because I got to take you back. Pre-independence days in Kenya with a bit of history. And it was Peter Kinyua who took me along for the ride. So, 1893, coffee trees were first cultivated in Kenya when missionaries imported bourbon coffee trees from Brazil. And these trees were descendants from trees discovered in Ethiopia, the official birthplace of coffee. Colonialists at the time named those trees Arabica, incorrectly, believing that they originated on the Arabian Peninsula. That's a different story altogether, but save it to say, Arabica, Coffea Arabica, is a species of coffee tree that produces Arabica coffee, which accounts for the majority of coffee consumed in the world. This species of tree is the oldest known tree to be cultivated for coffee production. Until the beginning of the 20th century, it was virtually the only type of tree from which coffee was harvested commercially, which, interestingly, wasn't being commercialized by Kenyans themselves.
Now, when you go back to our history and why we weren't allowed to plant cash crops, is because we were fighting our colonizer. Cash crop is something that will be there forever. We were allowed to grow subsistence crops, but not cash crops. Cash crops is something that you would have year after year. And part, I guess, of colonization was that we would not be allowed to grow either coffee or tea. These were predominantly white farms. And then you have coffee that was grown up country. And I say up country around Mount Kenya, the slopes of Mount Kenya. These were indigenous farmers. So prior to, say, 1955, after the emergency, which was during the Mau Mau fight for independence, the natives never grew coffee. What is interesting about coffee is you can follow it and you will know who the colonizer was, at least in Africa. Kenya, we were colonized by the British. To this day, Kenyans drink tea. They're not coffee drinkers. Why? The influence of the British. Go to Tanzania. The coffee is not nearly as good as ours. But Tanzanians drink a lot more coffee than Kenyans. Why? They were colonized by the Germans. It's interesting. Then you go to Ethiopia. They were never colonized, but they had a huge influence of the Italians. They drink coffee. So in Africa, there's a history between coffee and the colonizers.
Present-day CEO of Servicoff Limited, a leader in growing, processing, and blending East African coffee beans since 1969, Peter Kinyua comes from a long history in the making of Kenyan coffee. His father played a historical part in growing one of the oldest cooperative unions in Kenya, the Kenyan Coffee Planters Union.
Now, my father was born in 1934, he's now deceased 2 years ago. He went to Makerere University in Uganda. And after university, he came back to Kenya and he joined Meru Union, which was a cooperative union made up of many small farmers that were planting coffee. So he joined the union and stayed there for 1 year before independence came. The guys who are running the largest mill in the country, which is the KPCU, Kenya Planters Cooperative Union, asked him to come to Nairobi and manage the organization. At the time, Kenya was producing about 50,000 tons of coffee. He came in as a trainee manager. By the end of 1984, he became the general manager. By 1969, he became the managing director. He ran the organization until 19, 88. In 1988, we were producing 130,000 metric tons of coffee. So he had doubled it. And he had convinced Kenyan farmers, small-scale farmers, that there is money in coffee and they should grow it. And everyone started growing coffee. This is how actually it came up. So KPCU took the coffee from the farmers, milled the coffee, and then brought it to a central auction where buyers from all over the world would come and buy it for export.
And today, according to Wikipedia, about 70% of Kenyan coffee is produced by small-scale holders, with more than 150,000 coffee farmers in Kenya and more than 6 million Kenyans working directly or indirectly in the coffee industry. Like many of us say, we'll never follow in our parents' footsteps. Peter is a bean who didn't fall far from his father's tree.
What up? Yeah, what up, Nairobi? Check it. 254 in the building. Check it. Yeah. And since I debuted on the scene, I knew I was gonna be a rebel. Yeah. And what I be doing is dope, so y'all ain't even in my level. Yeah. I walk in the club and I'm loving the way that I'm rocking the medals. The way that I carry the stick, the girls are calling me Yago. They calling me Julius Yago.
I said to my dad, could you help me get a job in New York trading coffee? And he spoke to a friend of his who got me a job on 77 Water Street for a company called Lawn Ray Inc. And so I moved down to Manhattan. It's terrible in my mind because I'd never been to a more scary place in my life. I had visited New York, but I'd never lived there. So I lived up in Riverdale. And I took the number one train to Wall Street every day, got off the train, walked two blocks, and I was at 77 Water. And I worked for this company, and we were doing the trading side of it. But actually, I wasn't really trading. I was doing what you call, it was cards. So I was doing all the stock for the coffee coming in. But whenever coffee arrived from a shipment from abroad, I got to taste coffee. And I did this for 2 years. And I realized it's not as fun as doing it from origin. So I came back on holiday and I never went back.
That's enough to build a big passion around for sure. I mean, I'm hearing all kinds of interesting themes, you know, this idea from the colonial through to commercial and then to the consumer. There needs to be a value stream that's built from the ground up.
I believe that that small scale farmer, part of the reason why the coffee tastes so different is the fact that they're using the old traditional way of drying the coffee. So you dry it out there in the sun, you bring it back. When it's dry, you put it into some traditional kind of storage bins with a chicken wire and stuff like that, lift it above the ground. So you're constantly getting that whole that aeration of the coffee even as it sits there before it goes to the mill. Whereas today, on the larger farms or the more modern farms, the coffee is coming into a dark room, which is concrete. And I believe that is what actually separates the quality of the coffee.
So 95% of our coffee is exported. And we are trying to market it in Europe, in America, in Australia, even now in Asia. Like, what's this, South Korea? They are really taking a lot of coffee now. Even Japan is taking a lot of coffee. So we are busy marketing, but how embarrassing is it that we don't have the proper knowledge from tree to cup to sell it properly?
Yeah.
In fact, people are just buying it because of the quality, not because that we really have this good information, about coffee.
So, okay. So when I'm at the shop and I'm buying my coffee and it says, you know, that it's come from this region or that region and it's Arabica versus Robusta. You're telling me right now, actually, that's not most important. What I actually should be looking for is the small scale farmer certified, anointed bag of beans. That's the better option for me.
I think it is. But, you know, there's another trick to buying coffee in a store. Everyone goes and buys beans. But what do you look at in your bean? You don't.
I'm hoping to see oil, but by the time you stuck it in the freezer and you've pulled it back out, you don't see the oil anymore.
Fail.
No. You must first of all, when you look at the roasted bean, you must make sure the roast color is uniform. A lot of people don't know that. Go down to your store today and look at it. You're going to find that you've got uneven colors. Dark brown, light brown, dark brown. Leave that alone.
The second thing is how to roast it properly.
Mm.
Because I don't think we are there yet. In terms of roasting, growing, yes. But in terms of roasting, we are still to up our game when it comes to properly roasting coffee so that we can, you know, develop good flavors out of that coffee. So we need to up our game in roasting. So we need some education about, you know, how to properly roast coffee so that we can enjoy the flavors of the coffee.
When you roast coffee, you get, there is, on the coffee bean, there is a center cut. Let me ask for some beans 1 second. I'll show you something.
Having caught him in his office, Peter was able to give me a quick visual demo of what properly roasted beans should look like.
There is something called a center cut. On that center cut, if you see whitish, that is another sign that the coffee is much better. So because you roast it, you think that you can't see that, but you can see it.
Yes. I see that white line.
Oh, I'm sorry you can't see them, but these are gorgeously lightly brown, toasty-looking little beans.
Anyway, so here's a trick. The white. So color must be straight, and you must have, it's called the white center cut. That is what is important, that white center cut. When you see that white center cut, you know you've got, the whiter it is, the better your coffee is.
I thought I was getting it, but I just had to ask.
So what is it that is the key to a really perfectly brewed cup?
So right now, what is the most important thing is the origin of the coffee. When I say origin of the coffee, I mean which country was this coffee produced?
Mm.
Right now, there are some, what's this? There are some origins that have been marketed so highly that everybody is scrambling for these coffees. Like Kenya, Ethiopia, Brazil, there's Colombia. Like there are some origins that have really been marketed. So the buyers are scrambling for coffees from these origins. The second thing, properly roasted coffee. I told you when it comes to roasting, we still need to up our game in Kenya because not very many roasters are roasting this coffee the right way. So they are buying the right raw coffee, but burning it. They're not taking it to the roastery and they're burning it. So it's not even giving us good flavors.
Mm.
So the second thing is coffee that is well roasted. Then number three, I'm specializing in is in the final cup, how to brew it.
Mm.
We also just don't know how to brew it, be it at home, in the office, or in the coffee shops. We really don't know how to brew this coffee so that we can, do justice to the flavors of the coffee so that our customers can enjoy or us ourselves can enjoy. So I think that's important because this coffee comes from us.
Ugh, confusion. The beans, the farmer, the milling, the roast, confusion.
A lot of people don't know how to choose their coffee. They don't know, but that is why there is a choice.
And we are the ones who should be educating people outside of Kenya or the continent, the people who don't grow it. Like we are the ones who should be educating the Europeans, the Americans, the Australians about coffee because it's a product that we produce. We should be the ones having the knowledge from tree all the way up to cup so that we can market our coffee better.
But if I'm not being educated as a consumer, I don't know to buy it like that. So if I buy coffee and I've been told over time, it's really going to be good if the beans are oily. Is that actually a marketing trick?
That's a trick.
Buy the right raw beans. Make sure that it is properly roasted.
Mm.
Another important thing for getting a good cup of coffee is the quality of your water.
Uh-huh.
Quality of your water is extremely important. Your water can mess up the coffee or can make the coffee. So check the quality of your water. And another thing is what you're talking about, equipment. Mm. Make sure you have a good coffee brewing equipment that works properly. And then, of course, finally, you have to have some brewing skills, some coffee brewing skills. So just having, some basic barista classes is important so that you can be able to brew a good cup of coffee.
Okay, now we're getting to the good stuff and the gorgeous baristas. Number three.
Now to the barista.
Yes, yeah. To the barista. I mean, that's quite sexy stuff. Yeah, I mean, for example, in Cape Town, there's always this sort of mystique around, you know, the typically it's a guy who's standing behind the machines. He's generally a good looking guy. He's got, nice biceps. It's like it's a thing. So is it mystique and appeal or is there a magic and a real something behind that? That's more than just kind of, you get your good looking guy and he's a smooth talker and charming and you make a good cup of coffee.
Yeah. So that kind of look is very important here in Africa, especially. Coffee, or let me speak about Nairobi and most of the African countries. Coffee right now is very fashionable.
Mm.
It's like the fashion. So it's a social environment. So number one, your personality as a barista is extremely important. You need to be someone who's social, outgoing, an extrovert. You have good customers, as in you know how to talk to people. Mm. Because people will be attracted to the barista because of the social aspect of the barista.
I feel like I need one for my house now. As I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, ticking the boxes, my equipment is failing, my pressure is failing, my beans are oily. I need my own personal barista.
Oh, yes.
Not just eye candy to sweeten your cuppa. Becoming a barista can lead to so much more.
Especially for the youth. Yeah, because for me, when we train baristas, we open their minds. We don't only tell them, think of being employed in a coffee shop as a barista. It's good to have some work experience, like 6 months to a year work experience. But after that, have a mobile coffee bar. Have a mobile coffee bar, just a coffee cart, a small machine there. And this is very ideal for the youth that need to, start making money for themselves. Mm. Because when you have a mobile coffee bar, I mean, the cost is much lower than, renting a space and starting up a coffee shop.
Are you finding it in young people who you train that there are those who want to do the entrepreneurship route? Or are they saying, I just want to get a job and then I want to go to the south of France and work at a hotel?
Yeah, so most of them are actually coming for the course so that they can get barista jobs outside of Kenya, mostly in the GCC countries, but also in Europe, America, Australia.
Mm.
But also half of them are looking for, to start their own coffee business.
Mm-hmm.
And they are looking for a cheaper way of, starting this coffee shop. So I would say it's 50-50. 50 are looking for employment, especially outside of Africa. And 50% are actually doing it for, to start their own business.
I guess this hits at the heart of the issue. Ancestry, agriculture, and economy. Fewer and fewer young people are interested in the business of coffee. The farm, the mill, the trade. And both Esther and Peter feel some kind of way about that.
Honestly, I think we have to work backwards. We have to work backwards. Like, for example, I entered the coffee industry when I was young. Yeah. So if you would have started me in the farm, I would have just resented it. I would have left the coffee industry a long time ago because the farm is boring for a young person.
Mm.
Yeah. It's not, but we start appreciating it once we get older. Like, for example, right now, I am appreciating the farmer more than I was appreciating them when I started in the coffee industry.
Mm.
So for me, I feel these young people, should be introduced to the coffee industry at the end where they find it exciting, which is the barista end.
At the end of the day, it's about families. How many people are earning from there? And this is what they're trying to take into account.
Listen, young Kenyans, this is something that we need to pull through because it is culturally relevant. It's sustaining our agriculture and our history. And as just recent as 1955, this was something we couldn't participate in. So now, from the position that you're sitting in of expertise, what the advice is for a young person to go into roasting. Do you see any young collectives of people deciding that this is what they're going to do?
Yes, you get up, get a license, go and buy the coffee. Today you can buy cheaper roasting machines. You don't have to buy a huge one. You can buy a smaller one. Go and buy 5, 6. These days, the milling lots, in the past, I think the smallest milling lot was 50 bags. Today you can buy 6 bags, 7 bags. Go buy that, bring it back, roast it. Open up your own restaurant. In fact, for me, if I was a young person today and I wasn't exporting or anything, I would buy a small roaster and I'll be roasting for people as I come in. It takes 10 minutes to roast the coffee. So you come and you choose, I want this lot and that lot. This is how I want it roasted. I roast it for you. That would be my thing.
Like, people need to be open-minded about it, because you can argue on that point, because it's true what Peter was saying. Then now you start getting interested, and then now you'll remember the farm that your parents own. You're like, oh, but my parents own a coffee plantation. Now that I understand how growing of coffee directly affects the end result in the cup, let me go back to the plantation and start advising my parents how to make sure that they produce coffee that is of good quality so that it ends up being appreciated in the cup. So for me, I feel like the youth should be introduced to the fun part of coffee, which is being barista. And those who are interested, believe you me, at some point in their barista career, they will go back to the farm, because they will understand that, okay, farming actually, is the foundation.
Well, maybe in a next life or further on in his lineage, as Peter himself doubts that his own son may someday be interested in taking over the family farms and the coffee exporting trade.
But remember that this one guy and his wife had 4 children. They're dying off now. Land in Africa is a huge thing. So what's happening? He's dying and he's leaving 4 children, 5 children, 2 children. One child wants to farm coffee. The other one is saying, no, I want my piece of land. So until we get a new group of young people who are back there, who wants to look after coffee, it's breaking up. Succession. That generation is dying off.
And isn't that the way it often goes? After all, Peter's father never thought he'd fall so close to the tree. Oh, and speaking of trees, Peter is also chairman of Kenya Forest Service, not only looking after his family farm, but 2.4 million hectares of Kenya National Forest, coffee trees included. And still, when saying hello to him, he'll say,
so my name is Peter Kinyua. My father's name was, or deceased now, Henry Kenyua. I grow coffee under an estate called Njengo Estate. I drink tons and tons of coffee. Even here, it's embarrassing. I drink it hot, I drink it cold. I have a jug in my car. So I'm always drinking coffee.
Awesome. I love that. I totally love that, because that's what Barista Pro is all about. Like, we want to evangelize coffee throughout the African continent, because we we produce one of the best coffees in the world.
And that was Esther Otieno, and she's a barista pro. And I'm Yolanda Busby. Dark roast, please. Double shot. Kenyan specialty. Hey, thanks for listening to Be There, Do That, the podcast featuring everyday stories about food, race, and social impact in Africa. Brought to you by Lita Flora African Botanicals and Sourcing, this episode has been sponsored by Impact Amplifier. Supporters of African dreamers, innovators, risk takers, and humanists who are building the world that we want to live in. Thanks again.